I'm not taking any precautions. Like, I'm closing everything. I'm locking everything. Like, we're bolting the doors. We're not going outside for like a week.
You'll never hear from me again.
Yeah.
Welcome to Mysteretical, where we take a theoretical approach to solving mysteries. So join us this week as we go back in time before the term serial killer existed and even before slasher films, to a town that dreaded sundown. We're discussing the Texarkana Moonlight Murders. Why I chose this case. So, like most true crime people, I love serial killers. Nope. I'm fascinated by serial killers.
Yeah, there
I
you
love
go.
The psychology behind it. The nature versus nurture thing. I think they're absolutely fascinating. The other reason I like this case is because of the forensics. This took place in 1946. And when you look at their forensics that they had available then compared to now, it is a ridiculous growth. But they also kind of had more than I thought they would for forensics. Like, they could analyze fingerprints, they could analyze blood type, they could do all that still in the 40s, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And given, like, the time and everything that was going on, I thought that they handled it really well. I do want to state my sources. I did use Wikipedia for, like, a hot minute, but I try not to.
No shame in Wikipedia.
I also use Murder in the Moonlight documentary, which is reporters and editors from the Texarkana Garbanzo Beans.
Gazette?
Yes, Gazette. Reporters and editors from the Texarkana Gazette. James Presley, who has a PhD in history, and his uncle was the Bowie County Sheriff and
investigated. Not Elvis Presley?
No. His uncle was the Bowie County Sheriff and investigated the case when James was only 14. I'm not going to lie, though, that documentary was really, really boring. But it was all family members of victims and people that were there, or at least, like, around when they were younger, which I thought was cool. In February, the FBI released over 1,100 pages about this case.
So they released
everything that they had. And
did you go through all of them?
I did.
Dang.
Well, there was a lot that was like one type of form that I just skimmed through, and I was just looking for like one name.
The meat of it.
Skim it, and I would keep going.
I see.
I also chose this case because I think it's important to examine old cases because families and victims have still never gotten justice, even after all these years.
I can't even imagine.
Exactly. And because we can learn a lot about history and forensic science and see how much further we still can go, because they still haven't, even with DNA. I wonder if they're doing like DNA testing still. You know what I mean?
Like now?
Like familial DNA?
Oh, yeah, they're definitely still doing that. I mean, they're still solving cases with it, you know?
I want them to solve this one.
They might.
I hope they do.
They might even solve Zodiac soon. We don't know.
That would be amazing. Alrighty, let's get into it. So the town of Texarkana, here's my book report. It's very short. Texarkana was founded in 1873. It is said to be a mix of Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana. But there's three different stories of why it's called that. It is part of Texas and Arkansas, and Louisiana's like down here. So it's not, Louisiana's not part of the town.
Yeah.
So there is Texarkana, Texas, and Texarkana, Arkansas, and the town is a mix of Bowie County, Texas, and Miller County, Arkansas. So population of Texarkana is 52,000 people.
Back in the 40s?
Back in the 40s.
Holy crap, that's pretty big.
It's bigger than you think it is. It's really crazy. They had railroads, five highways, and an airport.
Oh.
And in 46, it was only a couple months after the end of World War II. So there was a lot of soldiers and strangers passing through because it was like this hub of transportation.
Right.
It was a 24-hour wild city, so it wasn't like a sleepy little Texas town that you kind of picture.
Oh.
There was nightclubs, there was bars, and it was a magnet for criminals because it was two states. So you could easily jump. The jurisdiction wasn't shared. So you could easily like do a crime in Texas and then really quickly stay in the same town and run to Arkansas.
Arkansas, yeah.
Yeah. So there was a big influx of crime, and there was a lot of murders apparently. Yeah, and stuff. But it was easy. If you and there's trains and there's like ways to get highways, there's ways to escape.
Yeah.
It was terrible. So let's do the scene. No. What am I saying? Let me set the scene. It's Friday night. It's around 11:45 p.m.
I'm asleep.
You weren't even born yet. So on February 22nd, 1946, this is 5 months after the end of World War II, just north of Texarkana, 25-year-old Jimmy Hollis and 19-year-old Mary Jean Levy. Nope. Larry. Mary Jean Larry. They were on a double date with Jimmy's younger brother, Bob, and whoever his girlfriend was. I couldn't find her name anywhere. I feel like they went to the movies or maybe to dinner. I forget. They dropped Bob and his date off like in town, and then he was going to drive Mary Jean Larry back home. But afterwards, they went to a lover's lane instead, which the road still exists, but it's still just like a patch of woods. It's not really a road.
A lover's lane, yeah.
Yeah. One thing to note is they were both married to different people.
But scandal. But
it wasn't, because they were both in the process of getting divorces.
Oh, okay.
And apparently that was really common because a lot of soldiers get married really, you know, before they go off to war and whatever. So.
Right.
It was fine. They even checked because her husband was 90 miles away on the night of the attack. So it wasn't him. They were not in the lane for more than 10 minutes. And when there was a bright flashlight shining in their eyes through the driver's side door, and there was a man in an alleged mask with a flashlight and a pistol. And he said, "I don't want to kill you, fellow, so do what I say." So obviously the best thing to do is to comply and get out of the car, because you're like, "I don't feel like dying, so please get out." And he told Jimmy to take off your fucking britches. So not the girl, but for the man, take your pants off. Which I think the theory is to make him vulnerable.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Like
100%. I mean, already you're in a vulnerable place coming out of a car to a man with a gun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like to remove your pants and stuff and be exposed in that manner.
Yeah. And to have a flashlight shine. Think about
that. And you can't
really
see it.
Yeah.
And you can't see who's on the other side of it.
You can just see like a shape, and that's kind of it. It's really.
Yeah. Ugh. And you don't know if it's a cop or what, you know?
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're like in a lover's lane, it could be because you're not supposed to be there or whatever. So Jimmy listened and took his pants off.
Yeah.
When he was hit in the head twice. They don't fully know what the weapon was. There was one super, super loud noise that Mary Jean Larry thought was a gunshot, but it was Jimmy's skull cracking.
Yeah, I was gonna say, ouch. Oh my God.
So he was knocked out. He had 3 skull fractures. And Mary tried showing the man that they had no money. She was like, "Look, we don't have anything." And he demanded that she give him her purse, but she didn't have it because it's the 40s and she was on a date. So obviously Jimmy was paying. So
you she would hope
just leave her purse at home. Must be nice. And he called her a liar. And then he struck her on the head with an unknown weapon again. Some people say it's the butt of a gun. Some people say it was a lead pipe.
Maybe the flashlight even if it was like a mag light, you know?
Right? Yeah.
That was my first thought, is like, you already have it in your hand. And if it's a heavy, like police-like flashlight, I don't know why I keep thinking it's a mag light, like a police flashlight, you know?
I think because they did find a flashlight, but it wasn't one of those. He told her to run. So she ran. She had a dress on and high heels because, again, 40s, you're on a date. That's normal. He stays in the back and is, like, beating the shit out of Jimmy, basically, as she's running. She comes up against across, like, an empty old car model, but it was empty. And he ran after her. He caught up with her, like, right past that car. And I will say graphic warning because she was assaulted and they think she was assaulted with the barrel of his gun.
Oh, yeah.
A nightmare. But a car drove up. So there was headlights coming down the main road. So he ran. And I forget how far they are from Jimmy at this point, but I think she's reasonably far up the street. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy waved down the car. And Mary hadn't seen him get up. So she ran over a mile to a house on Blanton Street and asked for help. So this is where the blue line is where they were attacked. And the second blue dot is how far she ran.
That's really freaking far.
It's really far. So this main road, Richmond Road, I think is the main road where the car was. And then she just kept running till she found a house that had people in it, which is at the end of the street. So, yeah, she ran really far.
How interesting.
Right? I thought that was great. That's why I was like, she ran.
And then he tracked her down?
I think he tracked her down closer to where Jimmy was because Jimmy did stop. He got up and walked to the street and stopped that car. Which, so she ran off and is asking for help at the end of Blanton Street. And Jimmy stopped the car. There was a man and a woman in the car, and the man seemed completely they both seemed completely unfazed by Jimmy being covered in blood and whatever. And he's asking for help, and the man didn't want blood on his seats in his car. So he was like, I'll call an ambulance. But that by that time, I think, I don't know, I've heard different. It's all old, so some of it's a little wonky with details, but an ambulance came. Because Mary had found help. The best part about this whole attack is they both survived.
Thank God.
Although it was not the love story that you want it to be. They did not get married and live a long, happy life. They got married to other people and had children and whatever.
After that kind of trauma, like, it's either hit or miss. Not hit or miss, but, like, it's you either are, like, bound to that person forever or you're just like, I can't, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like when kids go missing, the parents usually get a divorce.
A lot of the times.
Yeah. Because it's a lot of stress on a relationship. And I think Jimmy's son was saying how, because he moved away, he moved to like Arkansas somewhere. Yeah. And he said he was paranoid. He would go on walks or whatever and be, you know, if it was in the woods late at night or whatever, he would get nervous and be like, I can't be here. So he definitely had PTSD from it, which I do not blame him at all.
No.
So after the attack, Jimmy spent 2 weeks in the hospital and he was floating in and out of consciousness. And this is where it gets messy. So you have two living witnesses. You would think you would have a good, solid, you know, description or what his voice sounded like or anything like that. Mary said it was a light-skinned black man with a mask.
Yeah.
Jimmy said it was a tan white man, no older than 29. He had no memory of a mask. So did he have a mask?
You also have to take into account that, like, his skull was cracked in. Like, you can't walk away from that remembering every single detail.
Right. Even afterwards, he had such a clear memory of what happened. I think he was so traumatized by it that because even the old reporters and cops that were talking on that documentary were like, he remembered everything though. Yeah. Everything else. That was the only thing that was conflicting. So even for someone with three skull fractures and all this head injury stuff, he had a really good memory of what happened. The unhelpful motorists were never found. So no one knows who they were or why they were so just like not interested in what was happening.
Yeah.
And this is considered one of the most brutal of the attacks because of the nature of it. It was so rough and violent. And just because they got away doesn't mean anyone else did. So 4 weeks later, on Sunday, March 24th, 1946, a man was driving down Highway 67 and he spotted a car, an Oldsmobile, sitting on the side of the road. And there was a couple in it, but it looked like they were asleep. So he called the cops, which every time I kept seeing that in like papers and stuff, they're like, they called the cops. And I'm like, so they went home and like dialed on their crank phone.
Right.
Like,
what do you,
they went to a diner. What are they? With the, this is before beepers.
Or a payphone.
Yeah. But on the side of the highway, is there a payphone there? I think
maybe
there
at a gas station.
I think there was a diner nearby, but I'm not sure.
I don't know if I would be motivated enough to be like, I'm going to stop at this diner and call the cops. I would be like, I'm going to go home. And if I feel like it when I get home, I'll call the cops.
That's careful. I hope you never find a body.
Well, like, well, I don't,
you have a cell phone,
I mean,
so it's different.
He thought they were sleeping. So I would be like, if I were to drive past it, I'd be like, yeah, they're probably sleeping. I'm just going to, like, it's none of my business, you know?
Yeah. Well, and too, the first attack didn't get a lot of publicity because they lived.
Yeah.
So it was very, it's like the least publicized. I'm sure there was something about it, but I think it was just like a short.
Yeah. Like not front page news. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't this during war?
5 months after World War II.
Okay. So maybe like people were still like trying to be positive about things.
Probably. I would assume. I don't know. I wasn't alive then. I don't know the attitude.
Yeah.
But I know Texas has a lot of veterans.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, and if with that being such a hub of transportation, I'm sure there was tons of people with PTSD and
well,
shell
they
shock
didn't,
and
they didn't yeah.
And they didn't treat
acknowledge it. No.
Yeah. So the cops show up inside the car. They find 29-year-old Richard Griffin. He was a World War II veteran, a Navy veteran.
Yeah.
And 17-year-old Pollyann Moore. I just realized how big that age gap is. 40s was different.
Wait, 29 and 16?
17.
Okay. I mean, I think that's pretty normal for that time period.
For that time, yeah. Well, same with the other one. It was like 25 and 19. And she was already getting divorced. She must have gotten married at 17.
Oh, wow.
17.
Yeah, like right out of high school.
Which if you're, if they're 40 and you're 35, it's not that weird.
Yeah.
It's only weird in those 20s and teens.
It is. I mean, teenagers, never. Don't ever touch a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please. Quick PSA.
Don't touch teenagers.
Don't be a pedophile. So 29-year-old Richard Griffin, 17-year-old Pollyann Moore. She was a recent graduate from Atlanta High School in Texas and was his new girlfriend. They had only been together about 6 weeks.
Oh.
They were last seen around 10 p.m. on Saturday night. So this is Sunday morning that their car was found.
Yeah.
They were eating dinner at a cafe downtown with Richard's sister, Eleanor. And they were found in Richard's 1941 Oldsmobile. They were both shot in the back of the head once. Richard was in the car. He was in the front seat on his knees, well, between the two front seats, and his pockets were turned out and empty. So the theory is that robbery was the motive. Pollyann was face down in the back seat. And according to Max Tackett, who is an Arkansas state trooper and one of the lead investigators on the case, there was evidence of her murder being outside because there was a pool of blood on the dirt next to the car.
Yeah, so probably murdered outside and then shoved in.
Mm-hmm. And an eyewitness to the scene distinctly remembered blood leaking out of the car, like through the crack of the door.
Yeah, but didn't call the cops. Or the cop was already there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They might not have had access to a phone. I don't know. The other guy beat them to it. Maybe it was him. I have no clue. So the investigation was through the Bowie County Sheriff's Office, so because it's on the Texas side. But it also had the Miller County Sheriff's Office and the Texas Department of Public Safety. And I don't know if this is where the Texas Rangers got involved, but they did. So they found a little bit of evidence, but not too much. There was an early morning rain, so there was no footprints. There was no marks in the dirt outside. No blood on the car, no fingerprints. The rain had washed it away. Pollyann was embalmed before the investigation could be completed. So they don't know if she was sexually assaulted.
Insulted? It sounded like
definitely insulted.
Definitely insulted. Oh my gosh. I get it. It was different times.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be angry. Don't be angry. Woosa.
This was also 90 years ago.
Yeah.
So just they found one bullet and two cartridges from a .32 caliber pistol, which was later sent to the FBI laboratory, and they took. At this point, there was no federal crime being offended? How do I say that?
No.
There was no federal crime being
processed, pursued.
Nope. Done.
Being committed.
Committed. Thank you.
Woo! We made it.
English. So yeah, so there was no, they weren't active. They were just there as support after this murder. So I guess it's Bowie County, Miller County, Texas Department of Public Safety, and the FBI, and the Texas Rangers eventually. But don't worry, there's more. So.
More murder or?
More murders. 3 weeks later, Saturday, April 13th, 1946, which is the day before my boyfriend's birthday, but like.
1946, shit.
Years later. 15-year-old Betty Jo Booker was playing saxophone at her weekly gig at the VFW club. She was like in a big band. And 17-year-old Paul Martin, who attended Arkansas High School, but he graduated and moved 2 hours away. He was coming up to visit some of like his old buddies and to hang out with Polly Jo Booker. That's not her name. Betty Jo Booker. Polly Ann Moore, Betty Jo Booker. Okay. There's so many of them. It's hard. Yeah. I gotta, and they all the girls have like the three name thing. So it's
yeah,
very Southern. Anyway, where were we? 3 weeks later, my boyfriend's birthday.
Yeah.
Betty Jo Booker playing saxophone. 17-year-old Paul Martin visiting his buddies, arranged to pick her up after her performance, which ended at 1:30 a.m. on Sunday, April 14th.
That's really late.
It is really late, which when you think of a Texas town, you don't picture. L.A. goes to sleep at 1, so it's just bizarre for that time, and she's only 15.
Right. Yeah. 15-year-old having a performance for your saxophone at 1 a.m.
Yeah. But it's the VFW. I think they had an annual or a weekly. It was like a weekly gig at the VFW.
Yeah.
Betty was dating a boy named Jimmy Mars. And he agreed, even though he didn't know Paul, he was a Southern gentleman. And he agreed that Paul could pick her up. Because they were friends since kindergarten. So it's not like a threat.
Yeah.
It could have been. I don't know. But whatever. So Paul arrived in his brother's 1946 Ford Club Coupe. This is the last time that Betty Jo and Paul were ever seen alive. She did not bring her saxophone home, which she usually did. Like if they went out to get food or like go do something or hang out at a friend's house or sleep over at a friend's house after their gig, she would usually bring her saxophone home and then go out.
She had it with her?
She had it with her. So they ended up at Spring Lake Park, which is just north of the city limits. On Sunday, April 14th at 6:30 a.m., Paul's body was found lying on its side by the edge of North Park Road. He was found by this family. It was Palm Sunday. So this family was driving
to church,
the park, to like a family member's house to do breakfast or whatever in church. So he was found there at the edge of North Park Road. Blood was found further down on the other side of the road by a fence. Paul had 4 bullet wounds. One was in the left side of his nose, his left fourth rib, one in his right hand, and the right side of his head, like near the upper portion of his ear.
Yeah.
And a search party was organized. So Betty Jo was found around noon that day. So about 6 hours later. And she was 1.5 miles from Paul's body and almost 3 miles from the car.
So the car was in one area and then Paul's body was like a mile away, right?
Yep.
And then she was
another mile, like, and a quarter.
But also, like, further away from Paul. So she was, like, in the triangle, it would be, like, a mile between each of them, right?
Well, let me show you my map.
Oh.
So they're the yellow at the top.
Yeah, I see it.
So Martin's car was in the parking lot in the thing.
Ow, my elbow. I'm okay. I'm fine. It's fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Did your fingers go numb?
No, I like fell off a little bit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a shitty.
Oh, and like roll over your bone.
That yeah, hurts. It hurts.
This is also a map. See. This is modern day Texas. I literally Google mapped it and then just found where their stuff was and calculated it. So the car was in the park. He was north of the park. And then she was way over.
That's bizarre. So somebody would have had to like drive up on their car, pick them up, mm-hmm. continue driving towards where Martin's body is,
yep.
shoot him or whatever a few times, like something brutal happens. Maybe he fought back and was trying to save Betty. And then he comes, they like leave his body wherever. Mm-hmm. And then he continues driving and does whatever he does to Betty and then gets rid of Betty.
Yep.
Damn. That's
pretty much literally what happened.
But he had to have driven because there's no way you can have two hostages.
No, you know? And walk that far? That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
So talk to me about the forensics. Is there forensics?
Okay. There is. There's more forensics than was on the other one. Wait, did I have more?
I don't know.
Betty was on her back. She was fully clothed. Her right hand was in the pocket of her buttoned overcoat.
Okay.
She was shot twice, once in the chest and once in the face. Authorities are unsure of who was shot first, but it was evident that they both put up a really good fight.
Good.
So evidence like you wanted. Forensics.
Yeah.
There were three, and this is all my forensic stuff I got from the FBI paperwork, which nice. As crazy as it sounds to go through so much of it, I was so into it. I was so on detective mode. Like, I was like, I'm going to solve it, even though you That's guys like have had these papers right for like 80 years, and I just want to read them all.
Yep.
So there was three unexplainable fingerprints. Bullet casings from a 32 caliber automatic pistol, which is the same
as before.
Mm-hmm. 2 days later, they discovered that the bullets from Richard Griffin, Polly Ann Moore, Paul Martin, and Betty Jo Booker's all came from the same 32 caliber gun, which was most likely a Colt pistol due to it being the only American-made gun with certain signatures that match the bullets and the casings.
Colt, not cult.
Yes, right? Colt. Colt. Colt pistol. Colt, like a baby boy horse.
Okay. Baby boy horse.
Although it could have been a foreign gun. That was just the only American-made one, which again, it was the war. You don't know.
Right.
They could have gotten guns over there. I don't know. They also found a black, I don't know if you say wind cord or wind cord, but it was from a man's hat. I think it went like around that. So if you picture like a
brim tap.
Yeah. Like, and like then the cord is like, or... no, like a brimmed, like a, I don't know about a 10 gallon.
Who's the
hat.
Murderer? Freddy Krueger has that hat. No.
A fedora.
Is it a fedora?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Or something.
Oh, like we are back then.
Think so, yeah. like big brim, maybe a cowboy hat even.
Yep.
I'm picturing like a black leather brimmed.
That's what I was.
If you've ever seen The Secret Window, like the guy in that, no?
Isn't Johnny Depp in that?
Yeah, but yeah. The evil guy has that uh-huh. black hat that has the brim. That's what yep. I picture.
Yep.
And I think it's a cord that goes like around the base where the brim starts.
Right, yeah. Where you can stick a feather in it or something.
Right.
Okay.
That's what I picture. I'm not positive if that's what it is. Tess revealed that Betty Jo was sexually assaulted. So they didn't embalm her first. They figured that out.
Yeah.
None of the news about the casings, fingerprints, or rape was publicized at this point. So it was all just on need to know basis.
Yep.
The FBI took photographs of Paul and Betty Jo's crime scene, and the tire tracks were also cast in plaster, which I thought it was so cool that in the 40s they still did that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Her saxophone is missing. So keep that in mind. Fear enveloped the town. This is the one that went super big. I think because they were so young, 15 and 17, they were the youngest victims.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hollis and Mary Jean, Larry's attack, like I said, barely got any publicity. Richard Griffin and Polly Ann Moore got a little bit more attention, but not as much as Paul and Betty Jo's death, which caused a frenzy.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the third in a row, you know? And it was how long apart were they?
They were all only, so Mary Jean Levy and Jimmy Hollis, theirs was 4 weeks before Richard Griffin and Polly Ann's. And then it was 3 weeks after them. And this is why they say the town that dreaded sundown, because that's when families closed all their blinds at night.
Yeah.
They made sure everyone was home. They set booby traps. Like, hardware stores were selling out of weird wires and stuff because people were setting
home
traps
alone
and
style.
Alarms. Yeah.
Yeah.
In their house. And Jimmy and Mary Jean the whole time were trying to convince officers that it was the same guy that did it. Because if they didn't get away, they would be part of this.
They very likely would have been like the first victims. I mean, we don't even know. They could be like not the first victims. Mm. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself.
Maybe. 3 weeks later, again, notice the trend. 4 weeks, yeah. 3 weeks, 3 weeks. It's Friday, May 3rd, which is my brother's birthday.
17 days before my birthday and my sister's, because we share a birthday.
Are you all Tauruses?
Yeah.
Are you a Taurus? Yeah.
Taurus Gemini cusp.
Oh, God bless you. Like, you're really grounded and you really don't know who you are at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle.
I think that's a really tough mix of.
I struggle.
Anyway, so 3 weeks again, later again. It's Friday, May 3rd, 1946, Taurus season. 37-year-old farmer and deputy sheriff Virgil Starks and his 36-year-old wife, Katie, are home in their farm. They live in a farm north of city limits. Virgil is sitting by the window with the shades open. He's reading the newspaper, which is like common. And apparently he had he was a farmer and a welder. So he had a heating pad on his back because his back was bothering him. And Katie was in the other room and she heard something loud, which was his body falling. So she came into the living room. Virgil was slumped over with two gunshot wounds that were fired into the back of his head through the window.
Oh my God. She didn't hear the gunshots? She just heard him slump over?
Yeah, she just heard him like hit the floor.
Oh. Dang.
I have a picture, but I'm going to post a better picture because there is like an actual picture. This is one of the like FBI copies or whatever. So it's not like the greatest quality. But you can see the gunshots right here.
Through the windows. Okay, yeah. It's more of a drawing. Also, to the left, beside that bookcase, it looks like there's, right there. There looks like a gunshot.
Oh, yeah. Bottom. Well, tax not over. So, you don't need to see my notes. she heard something break. She ran out. Virgil was slumped over. She ran to her old-fashioned crank phone to call for help. Honestly, she is a star in this. She, like...
I would have ran. Like, I don't know.
She wanted to call for help. She was like, this is bad. I got to call. Whatever. So she ran to her phone. The intruder shot two more shots into her head. One bullet passed completely through her nose and ricocheted off the wall.
Oh, my God.
Second one lodged itself under her tongue and broke her jaw.
So she can't even speak.
So,
but he didn't come into the house, this intruder.
Just hold your horses.
Sorry.
Hold your baby boy horses. So she fell to the floor, obviously, because why wouldn't you, like, you just got shot in the face. So she's on the floor. She's amazing. She tried to find a piece of paper to leave a message on for whoever found their bodies.
Yeah. Okay, that's
you
like...
imagine that? You're bleeding from your face. Your husband's slumped over dead.
You're like,
I have to write something for anybody so they can find it and catch whoever this is.
And then you have to figure out what you're going to write. Like, how terrifying.
And the other thing, too, was this was probably the only house that didn't have the blinds closed.
Mm.
Their blinds were open. But this was
And he
after.
Had never attacked inside of a house before.
Right. It was all lover's lane.
Yeah, because I was like, why are people closing their blinds? You know, like whenever you said it earlier, I was like, why would they do that? Like, he's only attacking lover's lane, so it doesn't even matter.
But here he is. So the man began coming in through the back window. So she heard him like jiggling with the door and couldn't get in it. And he started coming through the back. She fled out the front door, across the street, over the highway, over the railroad track into her neighbors, which was her nephew and his wife, but they weren't home. So she, I know, it's so, and I don't have a map of how far she ran because I tried to find the locations and I couldn't find the addresses anywhere. So she almost passed out from blood loss.
Yeah.
Shock, I'm sure. But she kept running to another house and they called for help and she survived.
Which
I think she always had a bullet in her tongue, kind of like 50 Cent. who also has a bullet in his tongue, but she lived.
Wow.
And then I wrote, why is this case relevant or not so relevant? At the time, the murders were thought to be connected because of the 3 week.
Yeah.
It fits. The killer watched this house. Max Tackett, again, one of the lead investigators, he said he saw a man standing and smoking a cigarette earlier that evening, and I think they found cigarette butts in that area. There was also tire tracks. Some people reported like a car. So that man had been, you know, Virgil was watching the intended victim.
Yeah.
Oh, they believed that Stark was the target, but there was he had a contradicting reputation. He was known, he was a very, very loved man in the community. So they don't think he had any enemies. He was very well respected.
I mean, an enemy could be hiding in plain sight. Like, right. They could be jealous of your life or anything mm-hmm. of that nature. I mean, you can wrong them once by accident, like not even intentionally, and they
just snap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because he was a cop, right?
Mm-hmm. Deputy sheriff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like those forensic files when they're like, he was a family man. And you're like, he did it.
Yeah.
I know immediately that he's the murderer.
So right.
We can move on from, I never expected. You never do.
Mm-hmm.
Robbery was not the motive. There was money and jewelry in the house, but none of it was taken.
Well, he could have been afraid because she ran.
Right.
And so you could be like, okay, the cops are coming. But I gotta go. Didn't,
like, chase her. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the evidence down on the scene. There was a 2-cell flashlight. There's the flashlight on the lawn. It had no fingerprints on it. There were latent fingerprints and footprints at the scene. There was type O blood found on the walls and the floor. There was a bloody palm print. 3 22 cartridges. How do you say that? 22 caliber? That's like, yeah. What is the word? It's not 20. They didn't find 322 cartridges. They found 3 22 caliber cartridges, which notice that's a different.
Yeah.
That's a different weapon. They recovered bullets from a 22 Colt Woodman automatic or similar. Colt, not cult.
Yes.
And there were All-Star tire tracks outside, which they cast. And they had the brand. They couldn't figure out the size, though. They were not super clear. A potential motive that I read, I don't remember where I got this. It was somewhere. I think it was I don't remember if it was the FBI files or not. I think it was. February 3rd, 1946, Mary Jones Allen died under mysterious circumstances at the hospital in Texarkana, Arkansas. Oh, also, this is the only murder that happened on the Arkansas side. Everything else is on the Texas side. Her body was exhumed in January 1947, and certain organs were sent to the FBI to be tested for poison.
So wait. Where does this woman fall into line in the timeline?
So February 3rd is
when, like, was the first 8 months murder? After the,
No, this is the same year. So this was February 3rd.
So
the first attack was February 22nd.
So it was before all of the murders. Yes. I see.
This is just a theory. They never went into it. I couldn't find any evidence after. It was just a possible motive for Stark's murder. So Mary Jones Allen died under mysterious circumstances at the hospital. Her body was exhumed a year later in January 1947. Certain organs were sent to the FBI to be tested for poison. The suspect was James Allen, which was Mrs. Stark's nephew. They were the people that he was the one that wasn't home when she
and
ran.
She ran over to him.
May have their theory for his wife who had died. Her husband claimed that she had Bright's disease. I don't think there was any medical evidence that she did. She just died very quickly, I think. There was a 2-inch cream-colored brooch found in her stomach.
A brooch. But it
may have fallen in during post-mortem examination, which I thought was funny.
That's like a pin, right?
Yeah. Nurse was wearing it and it
right, and it fell.
Yeah, because there was no there was no rips in her stomach lining or anything. Yeah. So it didn't make sense that she swallowed it.
Yeah.
So it's a theory that it just fell in. So this was the police's theory, and they sent this to the FBI because they sent all those organs to be tested. So their theory was that while Alan, Mrs. Stark's nephew, was away in the Navy, Virgil and Marie had an affair, a pregnancy, and an abortion, which they don't talk about proof of an abortion. They didn't find. And they didn't really find proof of poison either, because it had been so long. So her body had, even her like decomposing body, there's no evidence left.
But they knew about the affair?
No, this is a theory.
Oh, okay.
This is the police theory. Alan returned from the Navy. Mary Jones died a few days later. And the attending physician didn't report Bright's disease, but no autopsy was performed.
Yeah.
There was also, I couldn't find through all of this with all the fingerprints they found. I found no evidence of James Allen's prints even being tested. So I don't know. I feel like they just were like, nah, and just threw this away.
Yeah.
They did test the organs, but nothing came up. So that's just their thought, which could be likely. It's strange. He comes home. She dies a few days later.
Yep.
And it's mysterious. And she ran to his home and he wasn't there.
Right.
Which I didn't even think of till you said it. Mm-hmm. So the reign of terror comes to an end. Barely. The town is holding its breath 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
But nothing happens. Police and Texas Rangers set up traps. Like, they would go sit in lovers' lanes and have a dummy. Or send teenagers, like volunteers, to go sit. And they would be like, yeah, no thank you. But they would be in the woods, you know, waiting. And nothing.
If you're going to pay me, okay, I'll think about it. But
right. But they were, you know, they're probably desperate to catch them, even the people. Yeah. So I'm sure
I could see myself volunteering for something like that. I mean, I'm being watched by the police and stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So let's get on to suspects. There were several. I'm only really going to talk about two.
Theories, suspects.
Suspects. We're almost done. So the suspects. For Jimmy Hollis and Mary Jean Larry's attack, there were no suspects, which I feel like is because they didn't really know what to look for. Was it a tan white man? Was it a light-skinned black man? Did he have a sack over his... That was the other thing that I didn't mention, is the mask is like a sack, supposedly.
Like Zodiac mask, right?
No, it's like almost looks like a potato sack with eyes and a mouth.
I thought that was the Zodiac mask.
Isn't Zodiac that big black thing?
That's right. Yeah.
So there's no suspects for them. Richard Griffin and Polly Ann Moore. There were 200 people questioned, 200 false leads and tips checked, and 3 taken in for bloody clothing, but they were all cleared. Paul Martin and Betty Jo Booker. There was a taxi driver that was the prime suspect, but he was cleared. And there were suspects brought in from within 100-mile radius, but they were all cleared. Because think about it, so Richard Griffin and Polly Ann Moore, they didn't really have a ton of evidence.
Yeah.
But Paul Martin and Betty Jo Booker, they did.
I feel, just from listening to the case thus far, that the suspect is someone who had a failed relationship, maybe didn't go to the war, like
ran away
or was like ruled out and he wanted to go,
yeah,
but was ruled out due to like
a Captain America situation where he kept signing up but kept being told no,
rejected, right?
Yeah.
So he's like Captain America, but now he lives in the woods, like away from everybody. Like, he has a house and everything, like he lives a normal life, but he's a hermit.
Yeah.
And he's like targeting. So maybe because he wasn't allowed to go to the war, his girlfriend broke up with him and like all this stuff. So now he has like hatred towards
Like ashamed. Yes. Yeah.
And then maybe he got into some trouble with the police and it was Virgil's fault. And so he was like, you know?
Yeah. I could totally.
Okay.
See that.
So that's my side theory before you go into actual theories.
We're almost there. let's talk about the saxophone, because remember,
okay, yeah, it was missing.
There was a man arrested in Corpus Christi, Corpus Christi, Texas.
That's far.
For trying to hawk a saxophone. Is it far? Texas is huge, and I don't.
Corpus,
isn't it by the ocean?
Yeah. So from Houston, I want to say Corpus was about 2 hours, maybe three away.
Wow.
And Houston from the border
is far.
It's like
Houston. It's like Texarkana.
South central. It's like not south central. It's
Texarkana's
like south.
Texarkana's in the nook at the top.
Right.
On the Louisiana side, it's in that L. And then we could just look at a map.
We could.
Texarkana to Corpus Christi is 7.5 hours.
That's far, but I could see someone running. I mean, okay, wait.
Houston is not where I thought it was.
No, it's like right on the
I thought it was more in the middle. It's like way
down by the coast. No, it's like right there by the coast. Yeah.
Corpus Christi is south of San Antonio.
Yeah. It's like way down there. And so you're telling me that like you passed through all those major cities and no one hawked a saxophone?
I mean, but okay, but if you were gonna hawk a saxophone from a murder victim,
I would do it in the busiest area possible.
Oh yeah, but I would also try to go really far away.
Right.
I would pick San Antonio.
I would have picked San Antonio, or I would have gone to like
a LA, different state.
Or, yeah, mm-hmm. Gone super
El Paso
far
or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although were those places busy back then? I don't know. We're also talking about the 40s.
I know definitely Houston was. It was big. Yeah. Order.
And I'm sure Austin was too, but
yeah. Well,
maybe not.
I don't know about Austin because Austin's just hippies.
That's true. I love Austin. Anyway, I have family there. It's very homey.
I love Austin.
Anyway, so this man was arrested in Corpus Christi for trying to hawk a saxophone, which is 7.5 hours away from Texarkana. He was arrested buying a .45 caliber gun from a pawn shop, which, like, okay, yeah, he's buying a gun, but it's Texas, and it's everyone has a gun, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was bloody clothing in his hotel room, no saxophone, and he claimed that the blood was from a bar fight. He was completely cleared. I think they went to the bar and questioned people, and it was from a bar fight, so.
Where did the saxophone come from?
I don't know. Virgil and Catherine Stark, for their murder and slash attack, there were 12 people detained. They were all released. There was a plethora of false confessions, which always happens.
Yeah.
There's also a side theory that it was the Zodiac.
Yeah.
Like his early murders, because it fits his MO is pretty much the
Lover's
same.
Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he did go to California to hawk mm-hmm. the saxophone. You know?
Yeah. I think it totally could be Zodiac.
Yeah. And he wore the mask, and it's very similar to what the Zodiac
but
wore.
But made him look different so that, well, and it's right. Before, because Zodiac was in the 70s.
What color was Zodiac? Like, did they say that he was light skin, dark skin?
It was Ted Cruz.
Well, yeah, but I mean.
I think he was white. I think they said he was white. But he could have gotten a tan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially, I mean, like, maybe he was a farmer and he was out in the sun all day and.
Yeah, you're in the South.
Yep.
And it is sunny.
Yeah. Granted, it was February. Even yeah. Texas gets a little cold. So, I don't know. But I'm going to move on to the two main. I didn't fully dive into Zodiac because I thought that was lazy.
Yeah, just say it's Zodiac and write it off.
As much as I think it totally could be him before he became the Zodiac, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote down the two other main suspects. So H.B. Duty Tennyson.
Duty.
So. Like Duty Houser? Is that it? Doobie Houser?
Dougie.
Dougie?
Teach me how to Dougie.
Howdy Duty. That's what I was trying to think of. On November 5th, 1948, so this is 2 years after all the murders, he was an 18-year-old freshman at the University of Arkansas and was found dead at his home in Fayetteville, Arkansas. There was a note confessing to the killings. Do you want to read the note?
Yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Go for it.
To whom it may concern. Gertie, the squeaks aren't helping, honey. Thank you. Thank you for trying to set the ambiance. Okay. To whom it may concern. This is my last word to you fine people, and you are fine. I'm sorry, was it? Anyway, I want to thank you. Do you want me to redo it?
No, I loved it.
I want to thank you for all the trouble that you have gone to send me to college and to bring me up. You have really been wonderful. My thanks to Ella Lee, Mrs. McGee, the owner of the house he was rooming in, for letting me...
I don't think he wrote that. I think that was...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. For letting me stay with her during my college career, and to Belva Jo, Mrs. McGee's 12-year-old daughter, for putting up with me the way she did. She had to know, but I fell in love with her about a week ago. That's so precise. If she was older, I would have asked her to marry me, but that would be impossible. 12 years old?
Yeah, and he's 18.
Why did I take my own life? Well, when you committed 2 double murders, you would too. Yes, I did kill Betty Jo Booker and Paul Martin in the city park that night, and killed Mr. Starks and tried to get Mrs. Starks. You wouldn't have guessed it. I did it when my mother was either out or asleep, and no one saw me do it. For the guns, I disassembled them and discarded them in different places. When I am found, which has already been done, please give this typewriter to Craig Tennyson's older brother and tell him that I hope that his child is a boy. It will help him in his work. Everything can go wherever you think it will do best, except for the Viewmaster, which will go to Belva Jo. Please take my bankroll and give it to Daddy. I think it should go to him, and tell him I don't want the car now. Well, goodbye, everybody. See you sometime. If I make the grade, which will be hard for me to make. H.B. Tennyson.
Beautiful. You are fine.
You are fine.
So yeah, first of all, creepy because she was 12. But he didn't act on it, so less creepy.
Okay, so also, it is only a 6-year difference.
Yeah.
Okay, girls, she's 12 now.
But if you're 18,
yeah,
you wouldn't be attracted to a 12-year-old.
Unless you're creepy.
I guess.
Okay, so, all right. I don't know.
Well, okay. Several notes were found in his apartment or in his house, but they were undated and confusing. His friend came forward with Tennyson's alibi for the Starks murder. He owned no guns. Oh, let me finish that thought. Wait. So his friend came forward and said, we were playing cards that night and we heard about the Starks murder on the radio. So he had an alibi. He wasn't there.
Yeah.
He owned no guns and none of the ones available, like through family and friends and stuff, were the right kind. He also didn't know how to drive until 1947. So
maybe he was trying to justify his suicide, you know?
Yeah. Like give himself a reason.
Like more of a reason, like maybe, because I mean, back then, mental health issues weren't taken very seriously. And so if he were just to say, I committed suicide because I was depressed or because I realized that something, like I was battling something in my brain, maybe like that's the easiest way to explain it is to, maybe confess.
It's kind of fucked up, but maybe in those olden times when mental health issues were so taboo, it was less shameful for his family if
right.
he committed horrendous murders than if right. he was depressed or yep. mad.
Yep.
Yeah. That's sad.
And he was very precise on when he fell in love with a 12-year-old too. Like normally
love... You read it and you were like, that's precise.
Right. I mean, like normally love happens gradually.
Yeah.
Know? It's not like, oh, I met somebody. Like, normally when you meet somebody, you're like, okay, I am interested in this person. I like this person. And then like it grows from there.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I met this person. I know of this person. I spent time with this person and lived in their house. And then boom. Oh, I just realized I'm in love with her.
Yeah. It doesn't hit you.
Normally
like
you're more aware of it.
Especially if it's a 12-year-old, because I feel like you would be like, why is this feeling happening?
Right.
The other evidence is that his prints were not a match for any of the prints that they had. So he's out.
Yeah.
Sorry, Doody.
Doody.
I don't know how to say this man's name.
I'll butcher it.
Yule. It's spelled U-L, like Y-O-U-E-L-L. Yule?
Yule.
I think it's Yule. Swinney.
Swinney. Okay.
Sweeney. It's an I, S-W-I-N-N-E-Y.
Yeah. I know Swinney.
He was the prime suspect. There was a car stolen on the night of one of the murders. It was found abandoned on Friday, June 28th, 1946. I'm not sure which murder it was stolen from. Max Tackett was told where this car was abandoned, and he was staking it out when he apprehended 20- He was staking out the car. He apprehended 21-year-old Peggy Swinney. She was recently married. Her husband was in Atlanta, Texas, trying to sell another stolen car. The chief of police in Atlanta, because Max called him and whatever, in Atlanta, Texas, Homer Carter noted that there was a man trying to sell a stolen car to one of his citizens in that town. And so Swinney went down there. I think he brought Peggy with him, but I don't remember. And they went to a car dealer. Oh, he asked the man that Swinney had tried to sell the car to if he would recognize him, and the guy said no, but the guy was like really tall and kind of stood out, so he was like, but he'll recognize you and he won't want to see you. So they went to different car, like used car places,
yeah,
to try and see if someone would, you know, notice him. So they went to one and Swinney was there and he panicked and he ran. So Max chased him down, and after a brief chase he cornered him on a fire escape. And Yule said, sorry, I'm going to call him Swinney. I've been trying to do all the victims by their first names to make them people and his last name to make him not a person.
Right.
Swinney said, please don't shoot me. And Tackett said, we don't shoot people for stealing cars. And he responded, you want me for more than stealing cars.
And then he shot him.
No. Not for stealing cars. Oh. He had made similar statements about his fear of the electric chair, which if you're a car thief, you're not going to get the care electric chair.
Right.
Electric, did I say that?
Chair. You said care. You aren't going to care about the electric chair.
But you wouldn't. You wouldn't. There's no reason for you to, even for Grand Theft Auto, you wouldn't.
No.
So on February 19th, 1947, so this is a year after the murders, Peggy, his wife, wrote a written confession about her whereabouts on the murders that placed her and Yule in Texarkana on the evening of April 13th, 1946, which is the day Betty Jo Booker and Paul Martin were murdered.
Right.
In a letter from the police to the FBI, there was a couple letters from her that were all a little confusing. I tried to make the most sense out of it. So, according to Peggy, the Swinneys parked approximately 200 feet from where Paul's car was parked. Swinney had a .32 caliber and a glove, and he got out of the, I think he took Paul out of the car. Yep. He put the kids in their own car, and they drove approximately a quarter of a mile. So like you said, that he would have had to have a car.
Yeah.
He forced Paul out of the car and told him to climb over the fence, then shot him twice, which remember, he was by the fence.
Yeah.
He returned to the vehicle. And they drove past Paul, but Paul saw, like, Swinney saw Paul staggering, so he was still alive, which explains right. The four shots. He shot him again.
Yep.
They drove further down, and Swinney forced his wife, Peggy, to leave the car, and he raped Betty Jo. Mm. So she was out of the car for about 30 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
She could hear Betty Jo screaming.
But not only that, but in the first case.
Mm-hmm.
There is the people that drove up but did not want to touch him. And it was a man and a woman, but they didn't want to let him in the car.
I didn't think about that.
So we don't know where they were.
Well, it could have been a stolen car. So you wouldn't want your stolen car that you're going to try to sell to have blood in it.
Precisely.
That's bananas.
I solved it.
Ooh, you did. Well, but he's the prime suspect. There's more. So
yeah. Oh, okay.
They drove further. So that Betty, not Betty, Peggy got back in the car. They drove further down because remember Betty Jo was really far. They parked and Swinney walked Betty Jo into the woods and Peggy heard two shots, which remember she was shot in the chest and the face. Mm-hmm. He changed his bloody clothes and she like indicated where he left or where he changed his bloody clothes, which is where they found Paul's address book. It was in the exact same spot. So stuff like that isn't going to be in the newspaper.
No.
You know, there's little details and stuff. They returned to Paul's car. So they went all the way back down to the park entrance and grabbed a black case. Swinney grabbed a black case, the saxophone, out of the trunk.
I see.
But she never saw the saxophone again. She never saw the case. She didn't say saxophone. She said a black case. And then they spent the next few nights and days at her parents. And they drove to Dallas and stopped on the way to burn the bloody clothes on the side of the road. She made a statement about a date with Virgil Starks, which led to an argument between her and her husband. And Swinney stated he'd take care of Starks, returned with some old shoes. I wrote that all in one quote, but it's not, he didn't do that.
He didn't say
so he stated he would take care of Starks out of jealousy or rage or whatever. And he returned later that evening with some old shoes that had river mud on them. I wrote dropped in a river, but I don't. Oh, they dropped those in a river to get rid of them. On February 19th, so this is, when was this? When did she write this letter? Oh, same day. Same exact day. Peggy wrote a letter to her family explaining that she didn't think the police believed her about, she was like, what am I supposed to do? They're going to want me or whatever. So she lied about Swinney being the murderer is basically what she's saying. And she recanted her statements. That's crazy that you make this big confession and then you write a letter that you know the cops are going to read to your parents that's saying, I lied. I didn't know what to do. He didn't kill her. They're going to think he did. And now they're going to get him.
I mean, I could see someone who's being emotional do that.
Yeah. Lying or
both.
Confessing.
Both, yeah. Because like, if you're emotional and you're mad and you want revenge,
yeah,
I could see you doing that.
Yeah,
no matter what it is, because you don't. I mean, especially back then, like there wasn't such a thing as like serial killers and stuff. So like, you don't know what the consequences are for doing that.
So I have verifiable info, but it's all circumstantial evidence. The stolen car that was stolen on the night of the murder was in Peggy's possession because she was found walking to it. She claimed that she walked in the woods where Paul Martin's car was found, and the officers had found women's heel prints there, which again, why would you know that?
Yeah.
When the lawyers explained that her husband was being held for murder, her response was, how did they find out? Her family, especially her brother-in-law, believed that he was the Phantom Killer. Sorry, this guy had a bunch of nicknames. He was the Phantom Killer, the Phantom Slayer.
Yeah.
It's the Moonlight Murders, the Town That Dreaded Sunday. Has a bunch of names. The victim's possessions were located where Peggy said Yule had discarded it, where he like changed his bloody clothes and the address book was there and whatever. One of the more damning things was they had a shirt with a laundry mark that said Stark on it. And it matched, they found little fragments of metal, which matched samples from Stark's welding shop. Well, it didn't say Starks. His last name is Starks with an S. And the laundry mark only said Stark. But I think the welding thing makes it more... Why would you
believable.
Have, yeah, right. It connects you to him directly. He also owned a .32 caliber Colt automatic, which he sold in a craps game. He remained silent. He didn't plead innocent. Like he pleaded not guilty, but he didn't plead that he was innocent. Peggy was considered extremely unreliable due to her being his wife. And she would confess, reveal details, including some known and some new information, but she kept recanting and saying contradicting things. Yeah. But he was still jailed. He got a life sentence as a habitual car thief. So.
Oh, good. And were there any murders after that?
No, this was a year later.
So the murders just stopped after those, like...
After the farmer.
Yeah. So there was a total of 4 instances.
Yes. There was problems with the evidence. Because like I said, that's all circumstantial. None of it is solid. Mm-mm. There were no fingerprint matches. She kept recanting. There
was fingerprints and was palm prints and stuff like that.
Footprints, so. All of that. I don't know if I didn't write that anywhere, but the stolen car had All-Star tires, which is the tires that they cast at the Starks farm. The Texas Rangers and Sheriff Bill Presley were not convinced that Swinney was the murderer. And after an extensive investigation for 6 months, Peggy was deemed a liar.
Well, I mean, you're going back and forth with your story. You are, and plus back then, like, women in general were not taken very seriously. I mean, I say back then, but even now, women aren't taken very seriously. And
it's better if, like, if I went for a walk and got attacked, it's better if I yell fire than rape.
Yeah.
Because rape, no one will help me.
No. And yeah.
Yeah. No, it's way worse back then.
Yeah.
This is also before the civil rights movement and everything.
Yeah, so. They're already considered emotional and like...
Hysterical.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So February 20th, that's the day after she gave her confession, wrote the letter to her parents. It's quote unquote from the... I forget who wrote this. I think it's the police officers. To the FBI, they said she gave another statement, which was corroborated by her mother and father, definitely involving Ewell Swinney as the murderer in the Booker killing. The laboratory has identified the fact that the murders of the first and second murder were the same. She's all over the place, basically. She's like, he did it, I lied, but now it's corroborated that he was definitely involved. It's all up in the air. There was a story, because he did get out of jail eventually. And then the lawyer that was hired to help him get out of jail for the car theft or whatever, or his, worked on his appeal case, he like went to the guy's house afterwards. And the guy said, this was in the documentary, the guy said after he left, they talked on the porch for like 15 minutes. And then the guy left and his wife was like, who is that? And he was like, oh, it was the phantom killer.
Like he said it so matter-of-factly.
Yeah, because they all thought it was him. It was just the physical evidence was not enough and Peggy was too unreliable.
Yeah.
There's only another possibility. Earl McSpadden was found at 6 a.m., 4 days after the Starks murder, on Kansas City Southern Railway tracks, 16 miles north of Texarkana. He was lying face down beside the tracks, head pointed north. His left arm was severed at the elbow. His leg was severed at the hip. And they were inside the tracks. He was on a train track.
So a train took these limbs off?
Yes. It is said that the limbs were severed. It was like a clean cut. So cut by the freight train as it passed at 5:30. Because this is at 6 a.m.
So he had to have been laying passed out somehow on those tracks with one leg completely over it because it's right at the hip.
Right. And then the elbow.
And his arm at the elbow. Yeah. Okay.
He was dead before he was on the tracks.
Oh, okay. So those came off post-mortem.
Right, by an unknown person. The sheriff disagreed with the coroner, so a second autopsy was performed, which revealed more evidence for murder, which is embarrassing. There was a deep cut over his temple, defensive wounds on his hands and wrists, and he was dead 2 hours before being placed on the tracks due to lack of blood around the severed limbs. There's also blood found on the street nearby. It is believed that Earl is the sixth victim or possibly the phantom himself.
Okay, here's my theory real quick. Earl was the phantom. Sheriff found out he was a cop killer, threw him on the train tracks, and then just denied it, you know?
I mean, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's hard because, it's generally assumed that the Starks murder was not the phantom killer.
I can see why. Yeah, it's not as though. Okay, so if it was Swinney, I could see him finding out that Peggy cheated with Virgil, right?
Yeah.
So I could see him finding that out and being like, you know how in movies, like it always plays out where like they don't know who to be mad at. And so they take it out on like couples, or he takes it out on like people that are in love or happy or something that he desires. And then he's like, no, I need to take this out on Virgil and Virgil's family. And so he goes and he kills Virgil and then tries to kill Virgil's wife.
Right.
Because he's like, he just doesn't know where to place his rage, because that's the last killing.
Right. And
so after that, he feels, okay, I'm done. You know, I've done it. That's what I think it could have been. I also, like, none of these suspects really hit the mark for me.
Right. Same. It could be the Zodiac.
Yeah, I like that theory too, because it's very, very, very similar to Zodiac.
Yes. And
from what I remember from the Zodiac cases, he started out killing. No one got away, right?
I don't think anyone got away. Oh, so, that one woman. Wasn't there that one woman in the car with the baby? Yeah.
There were a couple people, but like, this was basically his practice.
Yeah.
I could see that being the answer too.
Well, yeah, because what was his first murder was the one by the lake, right?
Yeah. I feel like the guy made it out of that one though, because I think that they were like, yeah, he had the bag over his head.
But I think that was on purpose. I don't think it was because he couldn't finish the job.
Right. I think it was on purpose, just based off of what had happened here.
And maybe he missed the attention because this got national attention.
And then after that, he started contacting the newspapers. Anyway.
That's possible. But that's also, this is also 20 years before.
Yeah.
So how old was the Zodiac?
He could have been not a day over
29, because that's what Jimmy said.
Yeah.
Not a day over 29.
So if he were young, and then you said 20 years later, so then he's in his 50s, he's already had a family, he's already like been married, his kids have gone off to college, and now he's like, I'm missing something from my life.
Yeah.
Oh, let me just go murder more people.
I mean, I think age for murderers, look at Albert Fish.
Yeah.
Starks could be the victim or not of the Phantom Killer. I don't, what do you think? I want to hear your theory on that.
On the Starks?
Yeah.
Is he
a victim or no?
I think the Phantom Killer. He was not. The only reason I would think that he was part of the victims is because he would be the intended target.
Right.
And like at the end. Other, right. He was the original intended target because, you know, maybe he did cheat with somebody and the husband found out, didn't know where to place his anger and shot.
Yeah.
And ended up like going and killing him eventually. But he had to like, he was figuring it out and his anger was so overwhelming. Like, what if he cheated with somebody, their husband came back from the war, he finds out she's freaking pregnant or something.
Yeah.
He's like, well, that's definitely not my baby. So tell me, like, whose is it? She doesn't tell him. He's like so enraged and like from the trauma from the war, from the trauma from like finding this out, like that's the love of his life. He doesn't know what to do or where to place that anger. So he goes and places it like towards the other victims, and then he's finally like, you know what, he finds out it was Virgil, and he's like, it was Virgil the whole time.
Aunt's husband,
right? I'm gonna go take care of Virgil then.
Yeah, I could see that, because then the murder stopped.
Yeah, well,
except for Earl.
But if it was not part of it, I could also see that being it, and then maybe the murderer had moved on to a different area or a different
lover. Right. Well, because remember, they're near three different state lines.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, that area, the south southern area of the U.S., like, has a lot of unsolved murders. And even in Houston, there was a ton of unsolved murders from that time period. So I could see him moving on to another city and just like still
blending in.
Right.
Yeah.
And being another killer or something.
And then moving to California.
And then back to Texas and becoming a senator.
Ew. There was, that makes sense. If Ted Cruz is the Zodiac, then he's also the Phantom Killer.
But was he
would also be like 100 years old.
Yeah.
So that doesn't add up.
No.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't think Starks was, a victim. But I do like your theory that he was the intended target. So after he killed him, he was like, okay, I'm good now. Like, I don't need to keep going. I killed the one I needed to.
I could see it being that. And I could also see it not being a part of it.
Right. But I do think if it was Starks, I don't know. I feel like I love that theory about it being his wife's nephew's wife and all this happening. And she died under suspicious circumstances and blah, blah, blah. I think that's a better motive than Swinney's. But Swinney had that shirt with the welding from Stark's welding shop.
I don't know.
There's a reason it hasn't been solved in 80 years.
Yep.
I also think it could have just been a stranger passing through town there for, you know, there for 3 months and then bye.
Yep.
Gone, disappeared.
Maybe like had a job there and then left building something.
Any other theories?
No other theories from me.
Well, if you or someone you know has a sack with the eye holes cut out of it, if you think your creepy old neighbor could be the phantom killer, or if you'd just like to share your own theories, please feel free to email us at mrreticle@gmail.com. Don't play with strangers.
And don't trust your government.
Choose Netflix and chill instead.
But wear a mask.
Yeah. And wear a face mask because it's COVID.
Right. That's what I meant. I didn't mean like.
Not a sack.
Don't wear your sack. God, no. That's not going to protect you from Corona.